The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
TV party tonight! What? TV party tonight!
Oh! We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated
to our favorite shows.
All my tickets.
Everybody loves Hypnotoad.
Gary Dawg.
Larson at Blurnball.
Futurama.
Good evening. You are listening to a Rattledge and Broadcasting premiere podcast, TV Party Tonight. I'm your host, the man, data reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified. And tonight, our favorite show is Sons of Anarchy. Sons of Anarchy is an American action crime drama television series created by Kurt Sutter for FX. It's got the movies.
Originally, I thought this was Days of Our Lives.
Originally aired from October 3rd, 2008 to December 9th of 2014, Sons of the Anarchy follows the lives of a close-knit outlaw motorcycle club operating in Charming, a fictional town in California's Central Valley. Charlie Hunnam stars as Jackson Jax Teller, who was initially the vice president and subsequently the president of the club. It was brought to you by the good people at the Linson Company, Sutter Inc., Fox 21, and FX Productions. And ladies and gentlemen, don't look now, but we put the band back together again. That's right.
About
the original trio. Yes, it's about goddamn time. First, my brother from another mother, the man who took a two-year journey with me from the corner to the deuce, and what a long walk it was, but a quite enjoyable one. So we thought, let's keep it going. Ladies and gentlemen, the starch. He calls himself Strip Sack tonight.
Snipped sack.
Snip sack. How you doing, Jesse?
Obviously a playoff of one of our characters that we'll be discussing this evening.
I thought you were talking about your vasectomy, but...
That happens, and that definitely applies.
Ladies, if you want to get inside of Jesse Starcher's sack, he just know he's snipped. No snip babies sack. Coming from the starch.
Oh my goodness. Yes, I am excited to talk about Sons of Anarchy and the first season. Oh my goodness. It's a lot of fun because I'm going to just tell you right now, I'm already at the fourth season because number one, the wife can't get enough of Jax. But number two,
oh, she likes this one, huh? This is not dummy. Boy. This is not any one of the David Simon shows where we tortured Mindy. This one she likes.
If she could remain awake to do a podcast with us, this would be one she would want to talk about. Would be it.
Well, a man who is always awake, he's your dungeon master. Ladies and gentlemen, from the Screamy Boy podcast, the misfit and miscreant himself, ladies and gentlemen, it's Roddy Adams. How you doing?
Hello. Sir? I'm well. I'm excited to be here with you guys. I miss the days of yore when we... would laugh ourselves silly and pee ourselves talking about various terrible comic books. And then Mark would just make me out to be some horrible person. And then we'd be like, good night, folks. You know, but
perfect.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it, Ronnie.
Right. Yeah. No, I get it. Jerk. No, you know, you guys know I'm a sucker for just about any like dramatic TV show. Mm-hmm. That's just overly, you know, over the top. And boy, I tell you what, Sons of Anarchy is over the top. And that's what I love about it.
So I want to talk a little bit about why I've never watched the show before. This season that we're talking about, season one, I watched it a week or two ago, and it was the first time I'd ever seen this show. And let's go back a minute. I was a peak TV snob, as we all know. You know, I watched Oz on HBO, and then I watched The Wire, and at that point, I was done watching television. Television was done for me. If it, you know, nothing was ever going to be better than The Wire, why waste my time? And you guys don't know this, but my friends from back in the day, like, you know, Jesse knows, yo, Chuck, where are you? The way to get me to watch anything, and this would be a thing that would follow me through the rest of my life, the way to get me to watch something, because they would say, Mark, you got to watch this television show. This television show is great. You're going to love it. And I'm like, no, it's not as good as The Wire. David Simon, no.
I tell you, man.
And they would say, okay, this is kind of like The Wire, but that was always the pitch to me. So Yo Chuck, Where Are You? Said to me one day, he was like, I know you like The Wire and you think nothing's better than The Wire, but watch one episode of The Shield with me. And I did. And I
that was, one got you. Yeah.
Yeah. I fell in love with The Shield. And I still remember the series finale. I was actually dating my ex-wife at the time, and she went to bed early, as she was wont to do at the time. And I remember, you know, that last scene of Vic hearing the sirens in his terrible brown suit at ICE, and him grabbing his gun and like running out the door. And I like ran into the room, like woke her up like an idiot. Like, oh my God, let me tell you everything about The Shield ever. the show that followed The Shield was Sons of Anarchy, which Kurt Sutter created the show, and he worked on The Shield, even though it was a Ryan Murphy show. And this was his baby, Sons of Anarchy. And I have to tell you, I had zero interest in it. You know, the thing about Oz took place in a prison, had to do with law enforcement, which kind of goes against what I'm about to say, let me get there. And then there's The Wire, and it was, you know, a cops and robbers show, essentially. Not totally a police procedural, but it was definitely a cop drama where you got to see both sides, you know, the law side and the criminal side. And so it was an easy hook for me to get into The Shield, because The Shield was another cop show. And here's the point that I'm trying to get to. Even though Vic Mackey was a shit, even though McNulty was a shit, even though everybody at Oz was shit, both the guards and the prisoners.
Everybody.
Yeah. At the very least, when it came to McNulty and Vic Mackey, they were still cops at the end of the day. At the end of the day, they wanted to put the crux behind bars. So it was an easy thing for me to root for them, even though Vic Mackey did some not-so-great things like rob an Armenian money train and, you know, shoot another detective squaw in the head.
Oh, man.
And, you know, Jesse knows all the bad things that McNulty did. I don't have to go into it right now. Oh, man. So when it came to Sons of Anarchy, I wasn't into it, because essentially it was about, it wasn't about cops. It was about a group of outlaw bikers who sold illegal guns. And I've kind of become my dad, where if I don't have a rooting interest in the main characters, if essentially I'm rooting for the heels to win, I don't find any inherent value in the show. So I completely skipped Sons of Anarchy. And then just to round out this point, I got into Justified years later, because, you know, friends of our show were like, hey, if you like The Wire, what if The Wire, but like the old West, but modern times? He's Justified. I'm like, all right, I'm in. And Justified is awesome, by the way.
It is a great show.
So I'm going to pitch it to you, Ronnie, because now you kind of heard my preamble about a show like this. It's hard for me to buy into a show where at the end of the day, we're rooting for the bad guys to win. What do you think about that?
I'm very much a white cowboy hat rooting for the white cowboy hat kind of guy. Which is like, you know,
we know that we've matured and I love you and respect you and don't want you to run away from me for another 5 years. When you go, I'm into the white hats. I'm like, I'll bet you are, you racist. No, we're done with that now.
No, we're not. Bring it back.
No.
Make me feel whole again.
I ran you up. I'll make you feel whole.
There it is.
Oh boy.
Please continue. No. Not racist, Ronnie.
You're just saying that because you got some listeners. Legit. Like, I've always been into the good guy win and everything. I mean, there's always been there's always been an attraction to the cool bad guy, and then, you know,
Sure.
Seeing what they can do and everything.
Who didn't love the NWO? They were the coolest shit bad guys.
Right, yeah. And then, I know you hated the film, and I know a lot of people hated the film, but the last Fast and Furious movie where I thought Jason Momoa made a really good villain. Mm-hmm. You know my love of horror movies. Yeah. And even though, you know, my favorite horror movie is Halloween, the right. whole franchise and the Scream franchise, I never find myself cheering for Michael Myers. I find myself cheering for Laurie Strode and her family and everything mm-hmm. to get rid of Michael Myers. Right. And then I found myself cheering for the Firefly family at the end of, it was the House of a Thousand Corpses. And then there was the next one. I can't remember the name of it, but you know, they had that really cool sequence where they sat up in a car in a convertible and Freebird played and they charged the police. And I was like, yeah. And I'm like, wait, they're horrible people. They're monsters, you know? And so, I was almost like you. It took me a minute to get my head wrapped around watching this. But then I started reading a little bit about the duality of the character of Jax Teller.
Okay.
And that kind of got me into it. I was like, okay, I'll give this a shot. And then, you know, like I said, I'm a sucker for this, the stupid, you know, dramas that are on TV, mm-hmm. you know.
Don't get me wrong. I see inherent value in watching a soapy nighttime drama
like yeah.
S.H.I.E.L.D., Justified,
yeah,
you know, or stuff on HBO or Showtime.
Like, shoot, I was into that,
but that was
the teen dramas.
That's my issue is like at the end of the day, I feel like, and I'm gonna let you finish your point, but it's like we're looking at Jackson, we're looking at Ron Perlman's character, and we're mm-hmm. looking at Katie Sagal, and they're all shitty, horrible people, and we want them to win. And then there's the FBI agent. When we'll talk about all of this when Jesse does a show and tell. Then there's the FBI agent trying to put illegal gun runners behind bars, murderers. Right. And right. we're like, no, FBI agent, no, get her.
I can tell you. Why? Why are you doing this? At no point in time did I ever cheer for Ron Perlman in that show.
Oh, okay.
He did some
cool. Kind of like the villain's villain, isn't he?
Yeah, he was. He did some cool stuff, you know, stuff like right. that. Okay, that was pretty badass, but I never cheered for him to win because he was the one of the most irredeemable characters I've ever seen in my life.
Sure. He's like the Adabizi of this show. Where there was nothing, or Schillinger, you know, yeah. where through and through in a cast of bad guys, he was the worst. Adabizi yeah. was the worst. Schillinger yeah. was the worst. Just to sort of round this back so people understand what we're talking about here. Your whole thing with Sons of Anarchy is nobody is pure good. Nobody is necessarily pure bad. The intrinsic value of this character piece is the struggles of these guys in those shades of gray. Jack is being pulled in two different directions. There's the Ron Perlman, Katie Sagal direction, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then there's the chick doctor direction. You know, what kind of man is he going to be? And, you know, we're not anywhere close to getting to talking about it just yet, but like the season finale, you know, where he sees just how far this club has fallen from his father envisioned, and he's like, I'm going to right the wrongs. I'm going to get this back on track, because if we continue to go the way Ron Perlman's going, we're going to descend further into hell. And if I can kind of dig into your brain and pull out what I want from it, I feel like what you're telling me is therein lies the inherent value. Will he or won't he?
Oh, it's become a struggle for man's soul. Yeah. It's a struggle for Jax's soul. I mean, you've got his dad who eventually became a better person over time and started started Sam Crow. Just for the purpose of helping people and having a family,
right?
And it turned into something bad. Under
it's been corrupted.
It's been very corrupted.
To me, like, well, why did you watch the show, Rattle? It's because you're cheering for this motorcycle club to pull itself out of the muck and mire,
right? Well, I mean, let's go like this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like biblical, okay. Whereas something was created for good. And then man got a hold of it and corrupted it and made it, while it right. still could do good things, and they still did good things. Right. They went on motorcycle rides, raised money for charity, mm-hmm. things like that. But underneath, they were dealing right. drugs and guns and
right. blowing the rooting interest up. And, as well as motorcycle club shed its, you know, its oily skin.
Yeah, or not even that. But you cheer for Opie, who is a good dude. Mm-hmm.
Right,
he just got wrapped up in it because he needs money. And you cheer for Jax, who can become a good guy. And he's fighting against his stepfather, which is Ron Perlman, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what I was like, okay, this is the drama that I need in my life right now.
Right. All right, Jesse, we're having a conversation about rooting interests and, you know, the inherent value of a show where ultimately you root for the bad guys, the guys breaking the law. I just want to get your kind of 50 word take on it, and then we can kind of get into the show proper.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I find myself rooting for the anti-hero every once in a while.
Oh, do you now?
Street level no, starch. No. Street level starch over here.
So, yeah, I mean, I can definitely see the pull to actually, mm-hmm. that's where kind of the drama comes in. Not only is it unfolding on your screen, but it's also within you yourself. Like, oh man, right. why do I want to root for this bad guy?
Right.
But yeah, everything you guys have said about how Jax's character is kind of torn about trying to get this motorcycle club back into what it used to be. Mm-hmm. It's all there. So you're trying to find the bright spots of these ne'er-do-wells, if you will. And, sure. and why would I want to root for them? It's funny because starting this show, I didn't know what I was getting.
Yeah.
Ne'er-do-wells. I didn't know what I was getting other than I just knew my wife really loved this show and she said it was really good.
Okay. Can I ask a question? So I feel like I know Mindy. You know, we've been podcasting for like 100 years and you've told one or two stories about your wife. possibly more than I've told about my ex. And here's the things that I know about. I didn't say they were good or bad. I just said you told in a higher volume.
I got you. Okay.
She likes the rom-coms.
Mm-hmm.
She let you know. I listened back to our review of Dummy, and you know, and then here, you know, here's these three cisgendered white males, you know, discussing this very feminist, you know, pro-sex show, and we're like, but what do the women think? And like across the board, the women, you know, my Appalachian wife did not get much from this fucking show. I tell you that right now. Your exact quote. Jace said something very similar, which I thought was funny. But, you know, so I'm curious to know, you know, your very simple, very lovely Appalachian woman, you know, wife who likes the rom-coms. What's the draw here? What's, you know?
Right. Well,
it's got to be sexy Charlie Hunnam, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
I mean, who doesn't want to bang Charlie Hunnam? I know Ronnie does.
Oh, Ronnie.
okay, hold on now.
You said stop doing racism. You said nothing about gay jokes.
When did I say stop doing racism? Wow, I see how that sounds now.
Yeah,
you're really walking through the alley there with Joe Chill, pal.
Oh man, both my parents took one to the head on that one.
This was I remember specifically this was a suggestion by my wife's good friend. She mm-hmm. was, yeah, there you go. Sup, Jax. She heard from her friend about this great show that's on FX. You need to check it out, and immediately started watching it. And of course, I'm sure there were plenty of discussion about Jax and how he can't keep his shirt on. So But anyway, yeah, as soon as she, the thing is that
I'm the one that wants to bang you. Listen to you, Mark.
No question.
When you look at this and you start the show, you're like, okay, am I really going to like it? And they do a good job of wrapping you in. And I think that's what happened with Mindy. She was like, I'm in. And she definitely binged this one when she was able to. She watched this show years back.
Yeah.
So anyway, and she's definitely down to watch it again. And you know, I've had no complaints so far.
Do you have any genuine interest in like motorcycles or motorcycle clubs?
You know, it's great that you asked that, because I was thinking about the same thing. Like, you know, I personally don't. Yeah. We do actually have Mindy's cousin is a member of the villains of Marietta, I think is what it is, or maybe it's Villains Motorcycle Club or something like that. But he's a member of the stand-up guy. I don't know why they call themselves the Venoms or the Venoms. They're the Venoms. Holy shit! Oh. I want to be a member. Please put me as a member of the Venoms.
Check out our symbiotes.
They're not called cuts. They're symbiotes. but yes, I understand like the draw of being part of a motorcycle club. They aren't, you know, there's kind of like that. Everybody puts the gang stigma on top of them. And what you'll see here is that, yeah, it's very much present.
Like I was thinking about like Rob Halford, you know, Rob Halford, yeah. Took on like the classic motorcycle, like 60s motorcycle. I mean, when you think about like heavy metal culture, Judas Priest, Rob Halford, a lot of modern motorcycle culture and its aesthetic drew from like heavy metal culture rather drew from the 60s era motorcycle culture. You know, the big thick black leather jackets, black pants, yeah. Cowboy boots or motorcycle boots, that kind of a thing.
Well, they were your modern day outlaw.
Right. I'll be honest with you, like I've never had not much of an interest in motorcycles or motorcycle culture, but I think you'd have to be blind to not recognize how inherently cool they all look.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's cool. It's a cool thing to ride a motorcycle. It's a cool thing to wear your leather. Like I had, when I was in high school and in college, I had a black leather jacket. I want to know how many motorcycles I had? None. but by golly, I love that motorcycle jacket. Who doesn't?
There's a YouTube video out there. I think it's still on my page of my son who walked into my dad's garage and he was probably 2 years old. And my dad had this motorcycle. I mean, motorcycles are cool. And my son just flipped out.
They're an absolute symbol of American freedom.
My son flips out and like I have him on. If you watch the video, you can hear him go fucking shit bike. Like, well, I don't know where the fucking shit came from, but hey, he said it and it's on video.
Wait a minute. Did your 2 year old son drop a fucking shit?
He said fucking shit bike.
Nice. Get after my own heart.
Anyway, the point is that it drove him to curse at 2 years old. That's how cool motorcycles are. And this thing wasn't like, you know, this was just like your old Land Cruiser, you know, you got two big old things on the side. You can put your groceries in or something. But, you know, dad always had a bike from what I could remember as a young kid, actually riding on the back of his bike, probably at 10 years old. And yeah, it felt great to go down the road and just like you said, there's nothing but you in the air and the motorcycle between your legs. And it's a lot of fun to do that. So as far as being a member of a club, no, never thought about it. But just like I said, I know a few people that are.
Ronnie, 50 words or less, any interest in the motorcycle culture? Is that one of the draws to the show?
I will take 51 words, sir.
whatever, passive aggressive Pete.
Actually, yeah, not so much the club, but my dad had a motorcycle when I was a kid.
Okay.
I remember riding on the back of it. I was probably about 6 or 7 years old, going about 10 miles an hour up and down our road in the holler, West Virginia. But it felt like it was 110, you know, because I was a kid.
Right.
And it was a lot of fun. So I've always liked motorcycles, but I've never liked, for lack of a better term, I've never liked the sport bikes, the crotch rockets.
Sorry.
I've been a Harley guy, you know, for my entire life, because just like you said, they're cooler and they look like you're riding a horse, you know, a steel horse, you know. And then you get, you know, you could do the saddlebags or the, you know, the compartments and everything else. And you know, you've seen the guys with the ape hanger, handlebars that hang up high,
right,
and all this, and it's just if they get too high, they're dumb. But
hello,
I'm you know, like this,
get your motor on it.
What happened to his arms? They got pulled out of socket when he went underneath. When he went underneath a power line,
he stopped short and Mary Lou Retton right off that thing. It was incredible.
But it was just the thought of being able to jump on something like that and just take off and have the wind, you know, and the sun and the day. And, you know, it's just, it's like riding a horse, only much, much faster.
Mm-hmm. I want to compare, as a point of discussion, kind of jumpstarting the discussion of this show. I want to talk about the very first episode of The Shield. Spoiler alert, Vic Mackey shoots Detective, I think it's Crowley, in the head. And every episode of The Shield or so, there was some sort of case that the strike team was dealing with. But the whole time, while they're solving crimes and trying to clean the gangs off of the streets of Los Angeles, they are also trying to hide this murder they done committed. And that is the through thread. You know, a big, this is the reason why I'm bringing this up. A big source of the drama and tension that keeps you hooked into season one of The Shield. And then a little bit later when they rob the Armenian money train, every other season of The Shield, right to the very end, is that there's at least one through thread that you're interested in. Like, is Vic Mackey going to get away with it? Is he going to get away with cold-blooded murder of another cop? Are they going to get away with stealing the Armenian money, stealing from the Armenians? And I think that's one of my major structural issues with season one of Sons of Anarchy. Now, look, I'm not trying to pick a fucking fight with Ronnie. Like, here we go again. Mark shits on something Ronnie likes. And I would never offend the you know, the delicate
nature. Bubby, I've grown used to it. Don't worry about that.
Just Ronnie in a corner listening to Damn You Hollywood filleting himself. He's like, oh, I can't stand it.
Filleting? Are you saying flailing myself?
Flagellating. Flagellating.
That's the word, flagellating. Yes,
don't
thank you.
Fillet yourself in a corner while listening to one of the two.
I'm not here to gig shame.
What in the blue hell, Mark?
Flagellating.
Welcome back, Ronnie. Anyway, flagellating yourself in the corner. I structurally, I have problems with the show. It's a bit meandering. You have the stuff
you're a bit meandering.
Love you too, Bode. You have the stuff with Jax and the baby who may or may not die, and the junkie wife and the doctor, you know, and they've got a nice little will they won't they romance going, and that's fine. You've got Ron Perlman and Katie Sagal, you know, trying to push the club in one direction and Jack in that very same direction, and resistance to it by some of the other club members. You've got a murder that happens here in a storehouse full of guns blowing up over there. You have a brewing
a little
war
of this, a little of that.
Yeah. You have a brewing war between the Mayans Motorcycle Club and just the loveliest racism. By the way, one of my favorite things about this show is the amount of fucking racial slurs.
I knew you were on board for that one.
I was just like, every time one of they couldn't go a scene in some of these episodes without dropping a racial slur. Well, and not just the like the Mexicans or the blacks, like the whites got it too. Everyone got called something.
Oh, yeah.
It's wonderful. It's modern Shakespeare. Anyway, it just from a structural standpoint, and here's what I'm trying to say. There was no through thread per se. I mean, you can make an argument for, well, the very first episode, they blow up the storehouse full of guns and they spend the rest of the season trying to figure out how to get guns, how to sell guns. They're constantly making deals and double dealing and backing away from the, you know, and it's a lot of that. But then they introduce the Chicago police officer who's a domestic abuser. And then they have the federal agent and she's, you know, on her one man crusade to, you know, to get these, you know, to get this motorcycle club. And I just felt like there was no major Ronnie. There was no major through thread for me to kind of hang my hat on it. You know, it felt a little, I used the word meandering before. It felt a little unwieldy at times. And
I get that.
You know, and when it ended, and when the season ended, I didn't really, you know, I looked to see where it was so I could time the amount of episodes I needed to watch in order to prepare for the show. But it ends where it does with Opie's wife getting killed because they think it's Opie because they thought Opie turned on the club.
Yeah.
And then it's like Jax kind of shows up, makes a bit of a quiet scene at the funeral, and they're like, maybe we need to do things different now. Maybe we do. And then it ends. Like, I felt like that should have been the mid-season finale.
Like, well, they didn't know if they were coming back.
Well, that's the and that, but you just made my point for me. It doesn't have a solid ending. It very much like who shot JR at the end of this thing. You're like, wait, what's gonna what happened to the next episode? Oh fuck, we're at the end of the season.
What better way to for fans to demand to bring you back than leave it on a hanger like that? You know what I mean?
No, I don't disagree with you. It's just this is a slave to structure argument that I'm making. Tell your story, and when your story is done, be done. And if there's more story to tell, then we start another story, or we pull on some threads from the previous one that we can, and we continue the story that way. This one literally felt like the end of the season, the series finale of The Sopranos, where it just cuts off mid-scene. You're like, wait, what happened here? Like,
where? No, nothing is that bad. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not saying it's bad. What I'm saying
it's
is
bad.
It felt incomplete.
Yeah, okay. So also, I'm thinking of, what's that stupid Julia Roberts movie that's out right now that's not a complete movie? Netflix. Leave the
World Behind?
Yeah, it's dumb.
I have heard nothing but complaints about this movie. I haven't seen it yet. Yeah,
from Netflix. It's, listen, I told, well, I can't talk about what that movie was about because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But go ahead, Ronnie. I'm sorry.
Okay, just like Canvas Content says, it can feel...
It's Sean, like the chickens.
Oh, hi, Sean. Don't all come together to roost at once until they start the end game in the last three seasons or so. So they're, yeah, and they're, I was actually going to say, they're building up to a bigger picture. They're building up to a bigger, that rolling drama, you know?
Yeah.
You are very much a structured person when it comes to TV and movies. You know, you want that story to end, boom, start a new story. And keep going and keep going. I know a show that would drive you nuts. And it's Letterkenny.
Okay.
Because you have no clue where they are. It could be spring one day, and the next episode it's Christmas. You're like,
ex, because she's now currently mirroring her current partner's personality, is all about Letterkenny, and because that's his show. And so she's trying to get me to watch it. I'm like, I'll just take the clips on TikTok. Thanks.
It's a good show. It's funny. It's
really I've heard Shoresy is much more structured and much more my speed.
Yes. Shoresy, I was going to say Shoresy would be your world.
Yeah.
But anyway, I tend to enjoy the ongoing story and the cliffhangers and things like that. I was a big fan of Lost. I loved Lost.
Can I interject this just to kind of, because I like the conversation that we're having. I just kind of want to bat this around for a little bit. At the end of the first season of The Wire, most of the Barksdale organization went, leave me alone. At the end of the first season of The Wire, the best show in the history of television, the Barksdale organization mostly went to prison. They left a few guys out on the street. There was a few strings that they could pull on. But for the most part, they told the story they wanted to tell. And they never came back for the remaining four seasons. It was fine. The story essentially was over. The fact that they came back and they started looking at the death of the American Dream, in terms of the longshoremen, you know, or politics, or the education system, or media in the subsequent seasons, was all well and good, but essentially the season one story was done when season one was done. I can't say that for the first season of Sons of Anarchy. And while I accept what Sean is saying in our comments, and I accept the argument that you're making, I struggle with the forethought that we're just going to end the season. And we'll resolve this. We'll fix it in post. We'll resolve it later. We'll all come out in the wash. It's like, no. Tell your story. And when your story is done, stop. Where does this shit we're stopping in the middle? What are you, George Lucas?
Worked for him.
No, it didn't. Okay.
I get what you're saying. To me, a story is a story is a story is a story.
Sure.
Would it bother me more if they didn't come back? Jericho, one of my favorite shows of all time.
Oh, nuts.
Yeah. They were not supposed to come back. They canceled them after the first season.
You know, that's what happened with the Glades, right? They shot the sheriff in the Glades, and they never came back, so you still don't know who shot the fucking sheriff.
Right. Well, first season ends, they're having this big, huge battle, this war, right? And he's telling a story about his grandpa. Mm-hmm. It's in World War II. And I think the Germans asked for their surrender. And yeah, exactly. trying to plan on the bubble, but it was the whole story went nuts. It was the answer, and it was meant nuts to you, which is like, no, we're, you know, screw you, we're coming anyway,
right?
And at the end of the episode, the finale, he takes the radio. And they're like, you know, we want, you know, the middle of this civil war, you know, between two towns and everything else. And, you know, after, you know, what was it, like 10 nuclear bombs went off in America, Jericho was like the hub that where, you know, the radiation stopped.
Right.
And people wanted in. And he was, and then the guy just went, skied over. He goes, nuts. Mm-hmm. And then it was it.
Right.
I was like, oh, that's great. And then they're like, oh, that's not coming back. And I was like, no, that's terrible.
Jesse, I want to bring Jesse into the conversation. So, like, we're talking about the structure of the season. What's your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, it was all about, like, we're just going to give you an idea of what this club is about. So, yeah, it may have felt meandering. It was kind of like a day in the life of Sam Crow every single day.
Yeah.
Even though they had this longer, but the way that I viewed it, I didn't know that they weren't possibly coming back. I didn't know that that was the case. But the way
I was just going to say, I think that I heard that they weren't sure. I mean, it was like a hit, but
makes sense. I mean, it's the first season. You don't know. So, but yeah, it felt more like, hey, this is the motorcycle club. Get to know them because stuff is going to happen. And I think that that's the way the ending got me. Was like, oh, yeah, I've got an idea of who the members of this club are, and you get an idea of their loyalty to each other and their loyalty to, you know, what they can do themselves, and then their family lives as well, and then you have this tragedy that happens at the end of the season. Yeah, I want to know what's going to happen next. So the fact that it took this long to get there, I mean, I was on board. I wasn't going to complain. There wasn't any moments.
No, that's what I'm here for.
Well, yep. Yeah, there wasn't too many moments that took me out of the episodes or anything. And I was on board I was hooked for everything just to try and figure out, okay, what's going to happen next. And it did kind of feel soap opera-ish. That's probably the best way that I could maybe put
it's supposed to.
But yeah, it's a drama. So I'm not going to complain.
Nighttime soapy drama. That is its genre.
Jesse said what I was setting up with the Jericho thing. Mm-hmm. That one word, nuts, set up for a whole different storyline in season two.
Right.
It felt like a cliffhanger, but it opened up another door where they did a whole nother line, another storyline. It got bigger. You know, things changed. It was cool. It was really cool the way they did it.
They canceled Jericho. Remember, they canceled Jericho, and people were so pissed. They sent like
peanuts.
Yes, they sent like tons of peanuts, and I'm talking like metric tons of like dumping semi trucks of peanuts
to where NBC had to tell people, please stop sending us nuts. We'll give it another season.
Get your nuts out of here, for God's sakes. Nobody wants your nuts, you dirty people. So that Ronnie does not lead a brigade of Chris Bailey and Evan Bevins and others with soap and a sock to beat me because I said nothing nice about this show. Let me say something nice about this show. I really like the Charlie Hunnam character. I actually think he goes on a classic hero's journey where he starts off very much wanting the approval of his mother and Ron Perlman. And then over the course of time, he is, due to the closeness with the doctor character, he starts to see the error of their ways. He starts having a crisis of conscience. He does things like he saves the witness at the end of the season from getting killed. He sets her free. There's a couple, the stuff that happens with Opie really like sets him over the edge when he is promised by Ron Perlman. And I'll tell you this, I keep thinking about, how this compares to the Shield. Ron Perlman straight up lying to Charlie Hunnam's face about what was going to happen to Opie, because they really weren't sure if Opie had turned or not. And so, and then Jack is like, I saw the truth in Opie's eyes. I know that he didn't turn on us. And they're like, we really don't know. It's like, so you can kind of see where Ron Perlman's coming from. and they don't have a tremendous amount of patience to kind of wait it out to see. They're like, you know, the boiling point of the show, I think, was one of the better things that part of the writing was, with everything that happens, nerves are frayed and shot, and people are not making good decisions anymore. Right. And it became very much, to me, reminiscent of The Shield, because a big thing with The Shield was the strike team would do something nefarious, then they would cover it up, then they would have to cover the cover up, then they'd have to cover that cover. I know. And before you know it, poor Lem's being shot, you know, and you know, Shane's taking himself out. And
tell me the truth. Do you have a Michael Chiklis tattoo on this arm? And then
not on my arm, big fella. I got McNulty on one thigh.
Yeah.
McMackey on the other.
and I make Irish cups.
And I go to the bathroom and I make them kiss.
That's right.
Oh God. Why?
Because you started. I just anyway, said the arm. My point is that the drama inherent in The Shield was they were constantly trying to fix a fuck up from one minute to the next. And that's kind of what happens with Ron Perlman, where it's like, oh my God, we've lost the guns. Then this happens. And this, I know. And we get to the part with Opie, and he's sitting there telling Jax, no harm will come to your boy. And he absolutely planned to kill Opie. And they fuck up big time by killing his wife. And that's when Jax is like, that's it, I've had it. You know, you were like a father to me. My mother is my actual mother. And yet you people don't give a shit about me. All you care about is a stupid club and making money running guns and just being shitty people. And I don't. And this is what I mean by the classic hero's journey. By the end of it, Jax is like, I no longer want to be a shitty person. There has to be more to life than this.
He found his father's journal, too.
Right. Which Katie Sagal kept trying to take from him.
Yeah. She was a terrible person in this show.
I'll tell you what. We all know her from Married with Children. She's fucking awesome in this show.
Yeah, she does a phenomenal really good job.
Yeah, if you wanted me to talk about the craft elements of this show, I don't think the writing is all the time all that strong. Like I said, I brought up some of the structural issues, but the performances are spot on. Ron Perlman hits that like tenor of shittiness so well without being overtly like, you know, he's not the emperor, but
legitimately. You know, he's one of my favorite actors outside of makeup. He's great in makeup because that's what he's known for. Sure. When he's outside of his makeup, I think he does a great job.
Robert and I talk about this all the time, about like the best villains are the ones that believe they're in the right. Uh-huh. And that's what makes Ron Perlman's character so great and so shitty, is he absolutely thinks he's doing the right thing for this club and for everybody else. And he thinks lying to Jax up and down is what needs to be done. Like, he's the guy, you know, making the hard decisions. And he's like, and, you know, and then when he realizes he does fuck up, like, it's not like he's just like, oh, well, you know, you got to break a few eggs. No, like, he's like, he feels legitimately guilty about what they do to Opie.
Yeah.
As he should. Like I said, he's not a complete bag of shit.
Jesse, just for our sake, Opie's wife was the school teacher in Jericho.
Oh, was she? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's pretty cool.
The cute little brown-headed, you know, short brown-haired, school teacher, that's her.
That's right. That's right.
The overall arcing thing about, you know, motorcycle clubs, you know, there's just more of a gang than anything. There are wonderful clubs out there that do a lot of great things. And, you know, there's a church I went to for a while even had a Christian motorcycle club, you know, that was attending there. And, so there's a lot of good, you know, there's more good than bad really anymore, I think. But the whole point of the motorcycle clubs, gangs, things like that, is people that don't have family or that family feeling or that structure seek that out in different ways.
I was going to say, you know, the motorcycle club is also
a family,
a place for, you know, the Vietnam vets who came home.
Yeah.
Didn't have, you know, remember a lot of these guys
didn't have family.
Home. A lot of these guys came home, and they didn't have family, or they were rejected by their family because their family was against the war. A lot of displaced vets, and the motorcycle culture took them in large portion. You know, there's that Venn diagram is almost a stack of pancakes between vets and motorcycle riders.
Yeah, And it's a stack of pancakes. I like that. But no, I mean, that's what makes this, to me, that's what makes this part of life, or I mean, that kind of life intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
I like to, you know, it's just like, you know, I've never felt that need, really, other than, you know, family and friends, but, it would be interesting to be like, okay, this is my family now, and that I would do anything for them, including run guns and beat people, and you know, and then it's just a constant party in the clubhouse.
Yeah,
you know, there's always, you wake up every morning and there's always like, it's just like Jonestown. Everybody's just laid out on the floor, and then, you know, half naked women and, you know, and half naked men, you know, things like that. Just it's one of the things that was like, man, that's crazy. I wonder what that would be like in real life, you know?
Be awesome. All right, Jesse, unless you got anything else in terms of craft or themes, we can go into show and tell.
Are we going to talk about the songs?
Jesse, sing the songs.
I will sing every... Get ready, guys.
Okay, here you go. Here you go. Sons of Anarchy Karaoke with Jesse Starcher. Go.
Now, I just want to definitely give a shout out to...
That's not how that goes.
To the music that they used throughout the season. And this was, I thought, going to be a common theme throughout, but this season's really heavy with some of the great, like, hard rock. There's Fu Manchu is played in this thing. Clutch immediately stood out.
What was the name of that band again?
Fu Manchu.
Fu Manchu. Isn't that how that goes?
You are reciting something from the album, if I remember correctly, right?
I am repeating a gag from the Metal Hammer of Doom.
There you go.
Y'all wonder why I don't do Metal Hammer. Ronnie, why don't you ever come on to fit Metal Hammer Doom? Well, one, Mark makes up bands and
I
songs.
I don't make up bands.
You totally make them up.
Fireball like, Ministry. Fireball Ministry, Ronnie.
You've never heard of John Cougar Concentration Camp. Doesn't mean they don't exist.
Nuclear powered pinheads on Mars with strippers is on tour this month.
I saw nuclear pinheads from Mars with strippers open up for Metallica in 1989 at the Nassau Coliseum.
I'm sure you did.
There were a lot of bands at the Nassau Coliseum in 89.
They all opened up for Metallica.
And they all opened for Metallica. That show went on for days. Metallica never even showed up.
You've heard of Rockville, right? This was like Monthville.
Oh, man. But there's even some... Katie Sagal, I think, sings some of these songs that show up in here.
She has a really good voice.
Yeah, she does Son of a Preacher Man, I believe, in one of these episodes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so the music, it really stood out to me, and of course I'm immediately keying in on all those hard rock bands that I recognize and use them so well. I think it's really used a lot this season to the show's advantage. I wish it would have continued. I'll just go ahead and tell you guys it's not going to, unfortunately. We might get
they blew their soundtrack budget in season one.
They did. All right,
we need a really cool song here. You go bang pots and pans together.
But yeah.
I'm sort of just off in the distance banging a tambourine.
Yoko Ono to do the music.
Oh, no. Oh, geez. Yeah. So anyway, I'm shouting out to the music there. Just to let anybody know, if you're a fan of Clutch, which, by the way,
if I'd known you were wearing yours, I would have worn mine. We could be like gay twinsies.
Oh, you know what? I should have let you know.
Jesse.
Shout out to Buc-ee's.
And then there you go.
Ronnie met my wife at the Buc-ee's in Georgia.
You need to quit. That is a terrible rumor, sir. And of all the things that you've done to me on shows past, this is the worst.
Oh, wow. I've done some horrendous things to you. So.
Fu Manchu.
Fu Manchu.
So anyway. All right. Yeah, I don't have anything else here. I mean, we can get into.
All right. Whip it out and show it to me, Jesse.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess the best way to go about this, you guys have already talked a lot about the character, so we don't really have to get into it too much here. But as far as the IMDb, which has...
It's my show, I tell you, Ken.
Look out, ladies and gentlemen. It's Ronnie Adams' show.
Ronnie Adams just lawn darted me into the fucking side of the trailer.
Kick him.
You are the Rey Mysterio to my Kevin Nash.
That's right.
All right, give me a second. Let me get
every time I need a good chuckle, I watch that video.
I remember when, while he's waiting, I remember when Jonas was like 2 or 3 years old and I wanted to show him some wrestling and I just showed him like clips of fucking Hell in the Cell, like Mick Foley just get eaten off the cage. And for years, he thought that's all wrestling was. He was like, show me more wrestling. It's like, it's not all fat guys falling off cages.
Let me show you the beauty of the death match.
Oh, yes, absolutely. All right, so yes, we got Charlie Hunnam as Jax.
What's Jackson,
Jackson Teller. Here's a nice picture of Jax. We've already talked a lot about Jax. Well, I guess we're going to get some pictures of him here, maybe. Most of it's scenery, apparently.
And here's a tasteful shot of his buttocks.
There you go. Which you do get quite a few of those.
That's the next 15 slides.
I ain't complaining.
But anyway, we've already talked a lot about Jax and his conflict within and the conflict without. You guys were talking about what this character has to go through. Yeah, he at some point, the violence has got to be too much. Like, you're in this club, and you can tell that Jax is not really on board for everything, but he's been brought up in here. Running guns is just second nature.
Once you take race out of it, he starts to question, how are we any better than the blacks or the Mexicans? You know, we aren't doing anything different from the way they're operating at this point. The only difference between us is we're white.
Oh, the one-niners, the one-niners and the Mayans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of like his motivation, where he's coming from, which is essentially, we keep saying we're better. Are we better just because they're white and that makes us racist? Or are we better because we actually are better? And so far, I'm not seeing any evidence of that, which I think is an interesting turn for that character.
Then his stepdad comes around the corner and drops the N-bomb.
Sorry, that was one of the funniest. I mean, we talk about like our favorite scenes. I have two. When they talk to the one-niners at the end about who, you know, might have shot Opie's wife, and finally, this old racist fucking idiot, and Charlie Hunnam's like, if you don't shut up, I'll kill you myself.
Yeah,
that was great. My other favorite one is when Katie Seagal fucking brained what's her face from Orange Is the New Black in the face of the skateboard.
Oh yeah. Oh my goodness.
Because I've seen some violent shit in my time, but that took the cake.
That was rough.
This dainty 90-pound girl when soaking wet and just fucking takes one squaw in the nose.
Yeah, she gets hit hard. Cherry? Is that who her name is? Cherry, is that what her name is? Cherry.
And I want to say like her actual like Christian name is like Tawny something. Go ahead.
I was going to say, again, more of this season is kind of letting you into the motorcycle club and giving you an idea of who these people are in the life that they lead. And that whole
Karen scene, Manning, that's her name.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
There's that one episode where they go to the other club and that where we meet Sherry, and she's like, you know, she's an old lady. Or she's trying to be an old lady, I should say. She's not an old lady yet. It's apparently you got to graduate to be an old lady at some point. but anyway, that was just strictly there to kind of give you an idea of the lifestyle that is, that surrounds this club and what being the wife, or not even the wife, just the girlfriend of somebody in the club is. Anyway,
as opposed to the ass they pass around like a joint.
There's Gemma. Gemma Teller, yes, Katie Seagal does a fantastic job. I agree.
A dime piece in this, man. She is.
Oh my god, is it weird that she looks younger in Sons of Anarchy than she did on Married?
Absolutely
with Children?
Not. Well, they made her look old on Married with Children, I think, but this, she looks so much younger.
Yeah,
and like
hotter.
Like she was so pretty in How I Met, or no, what was it? 10 Questions, the 10 and Questions, John Ritter, John Ritter show.
Oh, 10 Rules for Dating My Daughter.
Yeah. 10 Rules for Dating My Daughter. She was so pretty in that, but and then you get this, and I guess it's just something about being a bad girl in it. But man, she walked on screen. I was like, oh, hey, Peggy.
I miss the high heels and the walk, though, for Married with Children. That should be this should be like her gimmick or like contractual obligation. No matter what character she plays, she's always got to do the walk.
Like Fran Drescher's laugh.
Yes.
The matriarch of the club. So she's, my wife described her as very manipulative.
Oh,
that is an understatement.
That's a gross understatement.
Right, right. She is, you know, as the mother to Jax, tell her, watches out for her boy and her upcoming grandson. Well, actually, yeah, her grandson, which I think it's after first episode where her grandson has appeared.
He's born, Abel. Yeah.
Yeah.
At one point, she tries to tell his biological mom, Abel's biological mom, to kill herself.
Right. She gives her the, just puts the dope on the table.
Yeah.
She knows. She knows she's going to use it.
Right.
And she's very, very.
Take this hot shot, shove it right up your ass.
She can play the mind games. She can play the mind games. Next up, let's take a look at somebody else. I'm going to look for probably Ron Pearl.
I'm going to need you to come prepared to the podcast.
Yeah, well. We got Bobby Elvis. We can talk about, you know, just kind of point out, is there any pictures of Bobby Elvis? Apparently not. Like, not a single picture here, maybe.
Jesse, I'm going to need you to come prepared.
There's Bobby Elvis.
There he is.
There he is.
Which, he gets that name because he's an Elvis.
Yeah.
Is it this season? I'm sorry, guys, but is it this season where they go and they are looking for a place for him to, like, perform as Elvis? And they've already hired a Korean guy.
Yes. Elvis. What was funny about that is that they throw the beating on the Korean Elvis, and he's going, "Oh my lord!" You know, as they're beating him, he's still doing Elvis.
Yes. I cracked up the entire time.
Yes.
Oh, mercy! Like, what are you doing?
I wanted to point that out just because that was one of my favorite moments as well. Then we have Tig. We haven't really talked much about Tig. I mean, we talked about the act that Tig commits and the fact that Ron Perlman's character, Clay, no put him up to it. Yeah. But Tig is a weird guy. Like,
I mean, he's the hand of Ron Perlman. He's his most loyal, you know, disciple, and he does his dirty work for him. And, you know, and he's very much
insane.
I wouldn't say even insane. He's very much a devotee of the Ron Perlman School of Motorcycle Clubbing. He follows his orders without question.
Interesting sexual proclivities. Is that the best way to put it? Yeah, there you go. Ronnie.
What do you mean?
What here, let me describe it to you.
Please.
I want to know what does the bratty say.
What does the bratty submissive think is so weird about his sexual proclivities?
Oh no, he's rather known for just we'll just say he's rather known for doing some things outside of the box and probably inside
Jesse,
the box too.
You know what I've been through the last 2 years. There's nothing outside of the box. What are you talking about?
All right, moving
on. Oh, okay, hang on. Sean in with the save. He has a fling with a trans woman. Listen, trans people need love too, my friend. There's nothing weird about that.
I don't think that's
well, not according to Sam Crow, but you know.
Sam Crow, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Sam Crow.
Listen, no one says you have to have sex with a trans person, but you know, trans people are people too, and they have needs. They have a need for Ronnie Adams.
Here's Chibs. The Irishman of the motorcycle club of Sam Crow.
Hang on, Sean's making a political statement. Okay. It's okay to say he falls for a trans woman. You're absolutely right. It is okay to say that. I swear to God, I'm not even doing a bit right now. I forgot that detail on the show. It meant so little to me.
Did it happen? Yeah,
well, I mean, like, nobody said it wasn't, but I'm just saying, on the show, oh, he catches hell for it.
Oh, that's man. Fair.
In the world of the show, it's probably not looked upon as a great thing, but yeah.
This bro right here on the screen, right there, is one of my favorite character actors.
Chibs.
Wow.
So this is Tommy Flanagan? And
would you call him a character actor?
Irish McLucky, is that his name?
Yeah, yeah. Would you call him a character actor if he only does one character? But he can't help it because he has a Glasgow smile. He's been cut into a Glasgow smile.
Okay. That's scary.
Or not? What do they call it? That's Scotland. They call it Yeah, it, whatever it's called, you know.
Well, yeah, it's he's definitely got a look about him. Plus, he's definitely Irish. Good guy to have in the club. There's, you know, as far as like if you were to rate these guys as far as evil goes versus good. And as we're going down the motorcycle club, Chibs always seems, I mean, they're all down for whatever, but Chibs always seems like to be the guy that kind of supports Jackson in whatever he's planning on doing. So I've always looked at as Chibs as a dude that's like, he's one of the good guys of this motorcycle club, in my opinion. All right. Next up, we'll talk about Half Sack. No, we won't talk much about Half Sack. But poor old Half Sack, he is one of the prospects in which, you know, again, they're kind of letting you in here. What is a prospect? Somebody that's brand new to the club. That's kind of they got to go through this. It's just like a fraternity. You know, they've got to go through the hazing. And our good friend Kip Half Sack Epps is definitely on the receiving end of a lot of that. Tara Knowles, which is our doctor that Jax has been involved with. I do need to be more prepared, apparently, Mark, because IMDb has no pictures whatsoever. I thought, boy, I could go to IMDb and be ready for this. Dr. Tara Knowles,
I liked her. You know, I was thinking about like the women in this show, and we talk about like the Adrian scale, or, you know, or like the Worst Wives Club and stuff like that, you know. And yes, Katie Sagal's like supposed to be a villain, so I can't really count her as like the, you know, on the Skylar scale. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she's not just like a bitchy, whiny, shrilly woman wife. She's, you know, she's one of the villains of the show. So she gets a pass. So then the only other women left, you have the junkie girlfriend, the junkie mom of Jax, or you know, his wife, or you have her. And I actually find her to not be one of the worst written female characters, which is I make a mention of it because that is a common trend in a lot of these FX nighttime shows. They write, you want to find a collection of men writing shows that just hate women or have had some real run-ins with some terrible women. It's these folks, because they always make the women in these shows just awful. And here, this one was spared. I like her character a lot. I think she's caught between a rock and a hard place. I think, you know, she wants to do the right thing, and she wants and she doesn't want to nag Jax into becoming a better person. She kind of wants to sit on high and say, "Here I am. Be better if you want to be with me." And then, you know, and it's like, okay, he's having a little trouble getting there, and she doesn't necessarily want to lose him, so she comes down a little bit.
Right.
Just enough to, you know, to kind of keep him involved in with her. But again, she's, you know, she's got Katie Sagal giving her shit. She's got the wife giving her shit. You know, she's got her own conscience weighing on her. So she's another one that's got some good, gritty, meaty drama, internal conflict going on. And I have to say, she's probably one of the best written characters in the show. She probably has, other than Jack, she probably has the best internal conflict.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that. All right. Let's head back here. There's one character that I definitely want to talk about for a quick second. If I can find him here, though, that's the problem.
Yes,
that's
going to prepare. You can prepare for the podcast, Jesse. You've only known about this for like 6 months.
You leave Jesse alone.
No. Okay. Jesse was on
his. It's been a bad night. It's been a bad night.
I hear you. Jesse was on his shit for all the David Simon stuff. He was just like, "Get out of the way, Rattledge. I have pictures of my penis to show." And I'm like, "Okay, Jesse."
Oh my goodness.
Then he shows up the Sons of Anarchy, and he's like, "He's all thumbs." I don't understand.
Because I'm back, and he's nervous.
Yeah, that's what it is. Actually, I've got three people on here. I'm pretty.
So, oh my god, it's Big Dick Ronnie Adams. Like, oh,
it's
my
not
god,
just three people. Shut up, Mark. It's Ronnie. I'm back, and the boys are back together, and daggone it, we're nostalgic.
That's right.
All yeah, and I'm going to show him now.
Speaking of nostalgia, let's talk about Opie since you brought him.
Yeah,
up.
Ryan Hurst. I'm trying to bring up Opie here.
Opie is an interesting character.
You should be more prepared.
He kind of reminds me of Cuddy from The Cut. You know, Jesse. Where he's like trying to get out of it, but it's so hard, especially when you get out of prison, to try to make a way for yourself, to carry your family, you know, do the right thing. And it's so easy to fall back into bad habits. It's so easy to go back to your former life. And then he's got the wife there, like, you know, just giving him shit. And he's like, you can't have it both ways. You're like, you're asking me to make more money. There's only so much money I can make legitimately. If I do this, I can make more money. But then you have to kind of, you know, stop being a naggy bitch. And she's like, but I am a naggy bitch. You don't understand. And then she gets her face shot off for it.
Poor girl. Yeah, you're right. You can't help but feel for Opie here, who's just trying to make it. He got out. He served a bit of time because of some other shenanigans that happened in the club, which I think it's a little bit, I want to say not resolved, but there's definitely some effort put toward finding out what happened with Opie and why he went to jail and who was behind that. That involved the episode of where the guy got the tattoo on his back burnt off of him.
Right? I was going to mention that. Yep.
Boy, you know, if I was ever thinking about getting another tattoo, that convinced me not to. Because what if I
get
the wrong gang member? Hey! Who told you to get a Green Lantern tattoo? Burn that shit off of him. I didn't know.
Get the torch. But you know, he's got to try and essentially get back into. He's trying to get back into society, but he can't make it. And the only way that he can really get some money coming in is by going back to the club, and which he does. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's a sad, sad turn of events there when they make him out to be a rat and he's not a rat. And then his wife pays the price for it.
I do have a point I want to make about, we're talking about Opie and how, you know, we're talking about, you know, Jax and Gemma and just how awful, well, I can't ever remember Ron Perlman's name, the character.
Clay.
We're just talking about how awful he is. But
hang on one second. You know how many times they said Sam Crow in this show, and it took me 6 or 7 episodes to realize that's the name of the club, not a person?
Dude, I'm right there with you. I'm like, wow. Do they live in Sam Crow? I thought this place was charming.
I had to look at the cast list like 12 times. Like, who the fuck some is Sam Crow?
AMS. Motorcycle Club.
Yeah, I Red got it there, Chief.
What was it again? Tell me again, because I want the listeners to know. I don't.
Sons of Anarchy.
Okay, yeah.
Motorcycle Club. Is it Redwood Original? Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Now I got it.
Sam Crow. SAMCRO.
You were saying
I did not realize that this was Opie, the guy from. Remember the Titans?
Oh, from that's him from Remember the Titans.
Mm-hmm. I didn't without you know the beard.
Hey, you know who else in Revenge of the Titans?
Revenge of the Titans.
You know that's the second one that came out.
Football. All the football guys have guns. It's crazy.
Hey, Jesse.
Not all of them.
Remember the Titans?
Yeah. Tell me.
What's his nuts from The Wire?
Oh, really? What's his nuts? You're talking about?
Listen. Every time, going forward on this show, every time you mention The Wire, you owe me a show.
Oh, that's never going to happen.
Of my choosing.
Okay, let's see if you can get through Sons of Anarchy, the whole all 7 seasons there, pal. Before you start demanding
we'll do it. Shows. We'll do it.
Okay, sir, before I rudely interrupted you.
Yeah, I'm used to it. Clay's this, like, we put him out to be this almighty powerful villain, but really, I mean, like you see him in secret. What's happening? He's getting cortisone shots in his hands because he can't use them. Mm-hmm. He's weak. He is very, very weak.
Very, you're humanizing this man. That's kind of what they're trying to do there, is like show you that this is a man who's old, and as badass as he is, he's definitely got some health issues. And yeah, it's
the funny thing is I didn't see it as humanizing him. I saw it as a flaw that he wanted to hide from everybody else.
Okay.
I, it didn't make him, it didn't make him humanized in my eyes in the least. I'm like, oh, that there's the hole in the armor right there.
Okay.
That's what he's trying to hide from everybody else. He's not as badass as he wants everybody to think he is. And you've got, oh man, you've got Outsiders pulled up. That's the
I'm just moving through the pictures because I wasn't prepared.
Well, that's a Ryan Hurst show that's actually not bad. That's about he's part of a family, two families that live in Kentucky up in the hills, and they don't, you know, no electricity.
Maybe it's justified.
I want to see how many other shows I can bring up here. We'll talk about them as we talk about Sons of Anarchy.
Let me ask you a question. There was a show. Was
oh, there's only three.
And they have
Oz, The Wire, and
damn it, you stepped on my joke.
Ah, I'm sorry.
No, I was talking about The Corner.
Oh, okay.
The Corner Store.
Yes.
There he is.
That's Opie. My God.
That's Opie.
Took me a few to get there.
The ladies love Opie too.
Oh, do they ever? I've heard Jax, and then second place is Opie.
Very close, second place.
It's all about the beard.
They fill the girls with so much semen.
Oh, here we go again. Oh, boy. All right.
You had to have been on last night's recording of source material.
You didn't want to, believe me.
I've been banned from source material.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
Okay, Jason. All right, what else you got there?
I mean, my goodness. It's going to take me forever to bring up everybody, but we also have Juice.
Oh, I love this character. So he's got his finger up this guy's ass, yeah? And because he's been shot.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's great.
And so the doctor comes in and he patches the guy's ass up. And he could not have looked happier when she told him how well, what a good job he did.
I know. He was so excited.
He's like, oh, someone does something good about me. Yay.
The entire time he's trying to hide his Hispanic heritage as well from the club because he doesn't know how they're going to react. And then it's kind of like, really? I mean, have you looked in the mirror lately?
Theo Rossi, I remember him. Didn't he play Shades in Luke Cage? Is that what it was? Yes. Or not Luke Cage? Yeah. Was it Luke Cage? Okay. Yeah. Whenever he was on the screen, I was kind of excited. It was always fun to kind of watch his portrayal.
Oh, he's a great character.
Yeah. Of Juice. Yeah. So I'd like that. And I think, you know, as we go forward throughout the series, he becomes even more enjoyable. I'm trying to find Chucky. The guy that they end up that has CMD.
The chronic masturbator. Yeah.
That was my favorite episode of all time. He had CMD.
Legit, all you gotta do is look up top here. We've got our own Chucky.
He's talking about you, Mark.
I brought him back to the show there for a second.
I'm not hopping seasons, am I, when I talk about CMD, am I? Mark, does that ring a bell at all? Because I'm sure that you would have remembered this. Do you remember? Does not ring a bell?
You're hopping seasons, yeah.
Am I hopping seasons? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, all right. Well, damn it.
All right, so anybody else we want to talk about before we close out for the night?
No.
I don't think you put up a picture of Ron Perlman. Do we want to actually talk about him a little bit more or no?
We can talk. I mean, there's so many characters like... Even the sheriff, or not the sheriff.
I was going to say Wayne Unser.
Wayne Unser, and then the deputy as well. The deputy who's like in next in line these are the foils that they kind of have to deal with. Like Wayne Unser, who is the acting police captain. I don't know if that's the right term.
Sure.
But he's in bed with Sam Crow at that point in time, and he's on his way out. And here we have a deputy that's kind of like that's good friends with Jax, or at least I'd say friends with Jax, friends with Tara, but also is like, I'm going to nail your guys' ass to the wall. Stop messing around and doing what you're doing here and charming. I think that's a great dynamic of the show because you're wondering like, okay, not only do Sam Crow have to worry about the Mayans and these guys and this guy, but they also have to worry about the law.
Jesse, I sent you something.
Oh, I can't wait to look. But anyway, so I, what else, Mark, what else can you think of off the top of your head that stood out to you this season?
I think just really in the last words I have to say about the show, the FBI agent, I
start talking. we're talking about, okay, we're talking about Allie, what's her face?
Yeah, this is a great podcast. Yeah, that guy over there, and what's her face, and what's his nuts, and, you know, fuck you face. The really pretty FBI
agent. This is horrible!
the really pretty FBI agent, you know, she has a great scene with one of the inmates where she tries to get him to turn, and he says he's going to do it. He takes her face and just slams it in the table.
And then
by the end of the episode, she's like, I'm going to kill you. She's got a face full of fucking blood, and she's like, I'm going to get all these guys.
Agent Stahl is her name.
Yeah,
Agent
here's Stahl. My problem. She's... They have to write... It was the same thing with the detective from Chicago that's doing the domestic violence and the stalking of Tara. They have to write the people who, by all rights, should be the good guys. They have to write the cops as inept, incompetent, evil, you know. And you're like, oh, well, we certainly hope the motorcycle gang gets away with the murders because these people are even worse. And I don't know. I kind of find that to be weak writing.
I will say that my favorite scene I was thinking about was where Jax confronts the guy mm-hmm. for stalking her, and he shoves the K-bar into the engine, like into the radiator of the car, mm-hmm. like just straight through the front. Doesn't he set off the?
He is not scared because he walks up to the guy and he's just like whoop and throws something. He's like, okay, you need to leave her alone.
Yeah,
and he's not scared at all.
And I mean, part of it is they own the sheriff of the fucking town. How much trouble is he really going to get into?
Even if they didn't, though, I mean, he's messing with the doctor, so he takes that K-bar military knife and shoves it straight through the front of that vehicle and sets off the airbag and everything.
Mm-hmm. It's just my last word on the FBI agent. They really have got nothing else. It's weird. Like, there's a part of me that wants her to succeed, but you're not supposed to root for her because you're supposed to root for the fucking stars of the show. But it's like, no, they flat out murdered somebody. Then they shot this poor woman, you know, Opie's wife, who isn't all that bad. I mean, I saw Opie's point of view. I saw her point of view. She's low on my Adrian scale. So it's like I'm watching her, and she's very much kind of doing the Vic Mackey thing of I'm gonna go outside the lines because, you know, we can't legitimately get this gang. But they got to be God. And it's like, I kind of agree with her. You know, her philosophy on it's going to take an extra set. It's going to take some extra circumstances to get this crew. You're not wrong about that. Yeah. And, but the show wants you to cheat. Wants you to root against her. Wants you to boo her because she's, you know, not, she's operating outside the lines. Meanwhile, Vic Mackey, you know, brutalizing gang members left and right, and we're all like, yay, Vic, yay, kill those gang members, it's perfectly fine. Like, so the dramatic whiplash between the Shield and this show is pretty bad. So but I like her, she's a pretty gal, good performance. I'm curious to see what they do with her in the next couple of seasons. That's really all I have to say about Sons of Anarchy, so I'll let you guys close out.
Let me just jump in here and say I did not jump seasons. Episode 5 is the CMD guy. This is the guy.
I'm glad we settled this.
Yes. Well, because he is my favorite character of this show. All right. So Chuck Marstein, he's a counterfeiter. And in episode 5, they go and they find him. They also turn him over at the end of the episode to the Asians. Of whatever the Asian gang is. I can't remember what their names are. But anyway,
I believe they're called the Chinese Chinamen.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. But
you said you're done with racism, Mark.
Never.
The great thing is he's sitting there talking to the gang, talking to the motorcycle club. And all of a sudden he just starts reaching down into his pants and they're like, what the hell are you doing? And he's like, I'm sorry, I've got a condition. It's CMD. It's chronic masturbating disorder. And it's funny to watch these, you know, these guys try to deal with him because they need him for this job.
Well, I know what I'm doing at work tomorrow.
It's just, you just sit there and you see this. I can't believe that. It's just, he is my favorite character of this season. And of course she is. Yes, yes, indeed. And we will be talking about him again. I can't wait.
It's like, you guys are people. I like the big burly, you know, the women are like, I like the big burly strong guy. He's really handsome. The guys are like, I like Jax when he shows the knife into that. He's badass. And then there's Ron Perlman. And Jesse's over in the corner. I like the guy that jacks off all the time.
Count me in.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. After over a decade of doing this with me, I think we broke Jesse.
We definitely broke Jesse.
His I didn't break
Jesse. 10 years ago, you show the same show. He's like, I like Jax. Jax is cool. Ron Perlman's cool. 10 years later, after dealing with an incessant amount of dick jokes out of my mouth, Jesse's like, I like the chronic masturbator.
I like the CMD.
Jesse's in the mirror going, I don't even recognize myself anymore.
Wait, they just said I like the CMD. What?
The CMD, baby. No, okay. So my final thoughts on the show itself, especially the first season. Like I said, it's getting you in to this motorcycle club.
Please take him down while he's staring at me.
No, I think he's, if you look at his hands.
You're welcome, Ronnie.
Thank you.
But yeah, they're kind of getting you familiar with all of the characters, and that's essentially what we have. We have an idea. There's a lot of characters here. My goodness, we have we got Sam Crow, we've got the Matriarch, we've got Tara. I love the Sam Crow character. He's yeah, Sam, character Sam shows thing. Up.
I've got nothing for this anymore.
An offshoot of the actual Crow from the comics, which I think is the reason why I like it. I think it's really cool. But anyway,
slide into the floor.
You've got the law enforcement, you've got federal agents involved, all of these characters. There's a multitude of them. And I think by the end of season one, they didn't have, it's 13 episodes with a lot of stuff going on. I think they did fine. A shout out to the music. It kept me interested. And this is, 45 minutes. I had this first season done within a weekend. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed myself. So,
all right, Ronnie, last words, take me home, baby doll.
You can call it a guilty pleasure. You can just call it a good show, whatever you want to call it. It's one of those things that, I recommend it. It may not be for everybody, but at least give it a shot. It hooked me. What was that?
Mark's watching videos. You go ahead.
How about we be professional and just focus on what you're doing?
I was prepared tonight. He wasn't.
I can't when you're over there watching TikTok.
Not watching TikTok. I'm on Instagram. I'm trying to clear a notification.
Turn anyway. Your phone down.
You turn your phone down, chronic masturbator.
I have nothing else to say. Good night.
Well, this inaugural edition of our review of Sons of Anarchy is now concluded. We'll be back for season 2, March 18th, season 3, April 29th. Hey, the day after my birthday, guys, I'm going to be 48 years young. And the day after that, we're going to celebrate my birthday with Sons of Anarchy season 4. Yay! I hear it's all chronic masturbating all the time. Then
you don't know how right you are.
Sons of Anarchy season 5, June 27th. Season 6 will be July 15th, and we will conclude our look at the Sons of Anarchy with Season 7, August 26th. So, not quite the David Simon experience, but we're going to have fun, and, we're going to see them all. If you're wondering, why aren't they doing it in February? Because February we do black shit. That's right. It's all black shit all the time. We have Jason on here. We have a lot of triple features for the month of February to celebrate Black History Month. Because, as we all know, as Ronnie got us started on, in February, we do black shit. In June, we do gay shit. In July, we do shark shit.
I never did that.
And at Christmas time, we do Christmas shit. Right, Jesse?
Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you. Never mind. I don't want to know.
What do you do at Thanksgiving? Well, let's talk about the cranberry sauce.
The CMD in the cranberry sauce.
In Thanksgiving, we stick our dick in the mashed potatoes. No, in the cranberry sauce. That's right.
That's right.
It's the Beastie Boys that stick their dick in the mashed potatoes.
We
stick
our dick in the cranberry sauce. You're like, we do black stuff in February, and Jason's going to be on here. And I'm like, but why?
Because we don't got no blacks on the Rat Legend Broadcasting Network.
You need to start outsourcing, baby.
No, it's funnier when Jason and I do that shit. God. Here we have two middle-aged white men talking about the authentic black experience. There's no cognitive dissonance here. Anyway. Speaking of cognitive... Where
did you go to fight for 5 years?
Ronnie, why did you quit podcasting? There's like a dartboard with my face on it. Where did you put the voodoo doll of me? I'm just going to leave this comment up.
Like sitting on it.
Because when I think of Black America.
Right. Jason Teasley.
That fits. Was perfect.
Black America. Oh my gosh. Anyway. So, back to the Transracial Rattlegion Broadcasting Network. Tomorrow, speaking of transracial, we'll be talking Disenchantment. It'll be myself, Robert Winfrey, and David Wright. We'll get part five. That's finally concluded. So we'll be looking at the last part of Disenchantment. And then, what? Thursday, I'm going to be doing double duty. I saw American Fiction last week. So I'm going to pop on Movies That Don't Suck and Some That Do. Because we said this year we weren't going to wait a year before I came back on again. So they're doing American Fiction and Saltburn. I don't have time to see Saltburn, but I'm going to come on and talk American Fiction. And then Sean Comer, who's been hanging out with us tonight, he's watching our show. He and I will be doing a triple feature that he picked. It'll be Street Fighter, Street Fighter II, The Legend of Chun-Li, and Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Ooh. So that'll be fun.
Okay. You went from okay to oh to
to ah! Yeah. All right, next week is movies all day every day. The 29th we get Hoity. Yes, we will ascend. Myself and Robert Winfrey will trip the life fantastic. We will sip Chardonnay and we will discuss cinema. We're gonna look at Past Lives, Maestro, and May December, which I heard the critically acclaimed guys talk about today. I did not realize it was about the chick teacher that slept with the 12-year-old, so that'll be fun. I'll tell you, I am somebody who is very giving. When people come to me and they say, I have this idea, this thing I want to do with you, and I say, well, I can do all kinds of things with me. I'm happy to do them with you. Happy to do them to you. So I was approached by one Dorian Price, and he was like, I have this friend who likes to listen to our show, and we would like to get into a sissy slap fight over Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern. So I will be in the position of judge, and they will be defending and prosecuting the Green Lantern movie at their request. So that'll be fun. And then Black History Month starts in earnest on January 31st. Myself and Jason Teasley will be talking The Blackening, Black Christmas, and Meet the Blacks. I don't know if you heard in that title there, but there's a theme. I don't know if you know what it was, though. It's very subtle. Thursday.
The views expressed in this podcast have nothing to do with Ronnie Adams whatsoever.
And then this has nothing to do with black folks, but Evan Bevins, good to his mother, likes to play strip snap with Jesse Starcher.
Good old strip snap.
Strip snap. That's right. We're going to be doing a actor focus on the vivacious, the cute, the beautiful, the talented Jennifer Garner. So we're going to look at Family Switch from Netflix, Elektra, and Peppermint. And then that's it for that week. All right, I'm done talking now.
He's done talking. Who's next, Mark? Cue me up.
Ronnie Adams, show us where you piss from.
Ronnie's I don't have to pee.
It was a terrible accident. Hey, I'm Ronnie Adams. I have a streaming channel that I haven't used in a while, but I'm starting to gear it back up. As you can see, I now have a microphone, I have headphones, I have a place that I can do this thing. So I'm going to start playing some more games online. I now am working on another podcast, and it's going to be named Misfits and Miscreants. It's going to be an actual play podcast of The Curse of Strahd for Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. And on top of that, I am a professional dungeon master.
Woo!
I do get paid for it now.
That's right. You can catch him at the Woodshed in Orlando, beating people, hitting them with the hot
people.
Glass.
Mark, people, you, just else? You.
Instead of CMD, he's got CDM, Chronic Dungeon Mastering.
Shut up.
You can find Ronnie Adams at the, you can find Ronnie Adams at the Swinger Party House in Lakeland, actually, in Florida, shibari-ing various people, mostly against their will. He's got a laugh at up, Brad, cowboy.
I will be. I am every Saturday. I am at Multiverse of Burlington, in Burlington, North Carolina, and I am dungeon mastering. I am. I'm actually their head. Their GM, not head GM, but I'm just like I run all kinds of different role playing games, like Dungeons and Dragons, Call of Cthulhu, Kids on Bikes, the brand new Marvel Multiverse RPG, which is a lot of fun. So it's a lot. It's really cool. I'll be also be at a convention called Mythicon in Asheville. It's called Mythicon West. Pardon me, Mythicon West in Asheville, North Carolina. Setting up some tables there, and DMing for some beautiful folk there. With that being said, I will keep everybody in tune. You can follow me at all kinds of stuff. There's my Twitch channel on underneath my horrible face. And
look for Ronnie at this weekend's BDSM night at Treehouse, where he will be in assless chaps and a cowboy hat.
The last D swing, stands for dungeon.
Lassoing up passerbys.
No, that's not true. You stop it, Starcher. You're supposed to be on my side.
Oh, no. Jesse has long been since corrupted by me.
You left Ronnie. You left me, Ronnie, and this is what happened.
Oh, no. I will redeem you.
You'll have to bring me back, Ronnie.
Oh, well.
There's no bringing Jesse back.
We got six more shows to do that, and then whatever we do after this, because this is a lot of fun, and I demand that we keep this up.
You can't bring Jesse Starcher back from the semen cobweb that I have him trapped in.
Just get me the hell out of here.
You know, I would love to look in your head one day.
Do not.
Then I realize it's you.
Yeah.
And it would just be like semen and
hey, and speaking of semen, Jesse, do your plugs.
Yeah.
All right. So look, you
are
go
there goats in his mind.
Goat whore. Recently, I think today, as a matter of fact, the Unspoken Issues podcast dropped. Speaking of webs, Wolverine and Venom in the Marvel Comics presents Claws and Webs. So you can check out the first time Wolverine met up with Venom. And do you think they got along? No. But hey, you know who did the art on that, Mark Ratliff?
Sam Keith.
That is correct. And you got his name right this time. And I appreciate that.
Sam Crow did
the art. It's crazy. But anyway, yeah, check that out. The Unspoken Issues is me, Dean, and Derry talking about Claws and Webs. And then last week it was Source Material dropping Booster Gold. And yes, you can tune in and listen to the very end of that podcast and hear the very first ever Source Material single. AI created Booster Gold. That's right. Ronnie Adams shaking his head because he thinks it's amazing. He couldn't believe what it sounded like. But no,
you got part of that right. I couldn't believe you did it.
I have a question, Jesse. When does your album drop?
Well, I'm working on it. Don't you worry. Okay. I gotta find a good album cover. That's the thing, and it's going to be completely
Jesse and his writing partner, artificial intelligence,
ChatGPT, hanging in there. But no, I was really impressed with the single, and you can check it out. It's completely based off of 52 Pickup, which is the story that Evan Bevins and I discussed. So,
were you naked?
Was I naked at the time I recorded the song, or when
you and Evan were talking about Booster Gold? Were you naked?
We were not playing Snap, I'm afraid
had
not.
You finished playing Snap at the time.
No, sir.
Okay. Because in my mind, you guys had played Strip Snap.
Sure.
You were naked.
Yeah.
And you were like, okay, well, let's record our podcast now. And Evan's like, should we get dressed? He was like, why?
Yeah.
Calling an adult to sit in on this.
Call someone for help.
Yeah.
That's all I have, ladies and gentlemen. I tell you what, next month, I'm making a promise. I'll be a little more prepared. I will have pictures. I promise.
I promise 10% less naked Jesse jokes if he comes prepared.
We can't guarantee what pictures of what, but he'll have pictures.
Yeah.
Once again, Jesse's dick slideshow.
Damn it.
Jesse and I, in one of the episodes of From the Corner to the Deuce, played a game of Is This Jesse's Dick or Not?
Tune in. There's a whole Spotify playlist. I'll hook you guys up.
I do want one or two quick.
Really, you want to continue this fucking podcast?
See what other nonsense they say. If you're in the like North Carolina area, anywhere near Burlington or anywhere, there's a little town called Mebane, and there's a comic book shop called Totally Awesome Comics. Mikey and his brother have really got me back into collecting, and they treat everybody like family. It's a great shop. I just wanted to get them a little props out there. So I was going to tell Jesse that I found a new brick and mortar that hooks me up. And then, of course, the place that I work is Multiverse of Burlington. So if you're in the area, come check it out.
Check them out for sure.
All right. Now that I've done torturing Ronnie, it's time to go and say goodbye to Warlord Jamboree. All right, folks, thank you for joining us here on TV Party tonight for the season one of Sons of Anarchy. It was a lot of fun. If you have the chance, if you listen to this, like, hey, these guys are really fun together. Yeah, check out some of the source materials from like 2015 to like 2019. If you think I tortured Ronnie tonight, there's some gag reels that are, what was the, Hit It Darren. To this day, Hit It Darren still strikes me as one of the funniest fucking
things. Oh my gosh.
Any podcast.
Oh my gosh. Done. Hit It Darren.
Hit It Darren.
Great stuff.
Yeah, we have Jesse, Ronnie, and I did a couple of years worth of source materials talking comic books together, and it was a laugh fucking riot. And as I said, over the last little bit, whenever I feel blue, I'll go back and listen to those, and I smile ear to ear. Like my face hurts from smiling. I was laughing.
I might suggest if you're skipping around, go to the Snagglepuss episode.
Watch it. Listen to a man's soul. Yeah. A man's soul dies on the podcast.
Well, someday Jesse's going to finish getting up the syndicated source materials where you can hear us talk the Flintstones, which was the beginning of Ronnie's soul dying.
Yes. That's where the rubber band in the brain snapped. And I was like, what? What is happening right now? And then Snagglepuss is where I was like, I'm just, you know, wither and die now.
Ronnie walked off the podcast and lived deliberately.
There's plenty of even jokes on that one, I'm sure.
All right. All right, folks. Thanks for joining us here. For Ronnie Adams, for Jesse Starcher, I'm Mark Radulich. Be well, be safe, and behave.